This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
While it might not be Olivier Rodrigo, East Manchester will hopefully still get to witness another Rodrigo masterclass this weekend. City remain hungry for four in a row. We're down the home straight. It's Wolves. See. City remain hungry for four in a row. Saturday evening kickoff. How many games to go? Four. Well, it might not be Olivier Rodrigo. East Manchester will still hopefully get to witness another Rodrigo's masterclass this weekend. City do remain hungry for four in a row, but we're down the home straight and it's only four games left. It's Friday the 3rd of May. I'm Ollie Kirsch.
I'm Alex Wilshaw.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
What's here for Gundogan? It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Alex, welcome back. You and I seem to be quite regularly put on these episodes together these days. I don't know if it's just good chemistry, if it's luck of the draw, but yeah, we're getting quite familiar, aren't we, mate?
Yeah, we are. It seems to be that way. Wouldn't want it any other way.
Love it, love it, love it. So, Wolves at home, 5:30 on Saturday, four games to go, still very much in City's hands. And, you know, despite the naysayers saying that none of these three teams will win out, they were very right against Liverpool. They were pretty right going against Arsenal. They have dropped a couple of points, obviously, that allowed us to capitalise and take it back in our own hands. But City still haven't dropped any points since, I think, before game week 30 now. The performances may not suggest that we're cooking as we were in past seasons when we've come down that home straight and been relentless, you know, just stacking up win after win after win and getting those outrageous records. But we are picking up 3 points every week. So how do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, it has been that way. It's been sort of back and forth a bit in terms of those feelings. I think we've had some great performances in the past 2 or 3 weeks that have sort of turned that ship in the right direction. But as you said, the important thing is taking 3 points away from every single match, and the team seem to be doing it at this moment. And I really feel like this is just another one this weekend where Wolves are going to provide a very tough test, but it really is just the case of get the job done no matter what it takes. So given how we've gone about, you know, the past few weeks when the pressure has really been on, and since the title has been in our hands, I'm feeling really confident again. I still feel really confident about, you know, the title from here with these remaining four games, but there's always going to be some rough moments, and there will likely be some moments on Saturday, tomorrow, that it will feel like, you know, it's slipping away a bit. Hopefully not. Hopefully I'm wrong in saying that. But by the end of the 90 minutes, hopefully those 3 points are in our hands and it is one game closer to that final point.
It's interesting that you think it's going to be tough, that you do have some concerns that there could be moments that Wolves could put up a good fight. I seem to do this a lot and preface my thoughts a lot by saying I might come to regret this. So maybe it's me telling myself that it's a shit take and I should probably stop doing this. But I'm looking at this. I'm looking at the table. I'm looking at City's remaining fixtures, right? We've got Wolves at home, Fulham away, Spurs away, West Ham at home. Personally, I think this is the most straightforward one that we have left, right? Going down the list here, Wolves, they've got nothing to play for. In reality, they're mathematically well clear of relegation. They are very unlikely to be knocking on the door of top eight, top seven now. Fulham, that's an away game. Spurs, that's an away game. We've obviously got that dreadful track record away at Spurs. And West Ham at home, final game of the season, that's pressure regardless. Unless by some miracle the title's wrapped up by then, that's pressure. So I'm looking at this thinking, this should on paper be the most straightforward one of the lot, no? Where are your thoughts coming from here that this could be difficult?
No, I think that's fair because, I mean, especially on top of that, the Fulham game is the early kickoff, so that adds a whole another dimension to things there. I think in terms of the intangibles, I would probably agree with you. I think, just as you laid out, I find it hard to disagree with anything there. But when it comes to the teams individually, and of course, there's always this, you know, is the team on the beach at the moment? Do Wolves really have anything to play for? How much will that impact their performance? I think putting that aside for a second, because we really don't know how they're going to come out, how their players are sort of dealing with that mentally, if they're still checked in fully or not. I think Wolves probably proved the toughest matchup on paper. And then, yes, once you factor in the intangibles, it sort of sways things back the other way. But for me, Wolves are the sort of passive-aggressive team in a way. Like, that's how I would like to describe how they play, where, you know, we lost to them 2-1 earlier in the season. And from that point to how they're going to be setting up this week, and they won't have Pedro Neto, which is a big miss for them and one of the main reasons that they did come away with 3 points against
Absolutely.
Us the first
especially,
time.
Especially with some of the defending we've seen from City with mm-hmm. wide threats and... Yeah, Neto for me is a huge miss. And we'll get onto the lineups in the second half. Carry on.
No. I just think that the way that they set up their team in terms of, you know, they already naturally play this sort of back five system, which a lot of other teams will sort of adapt to play that against City. And then when they do that, they're not necessarily accustomed to playing it. So it leads to sort of more errors in that sense. And then on top of that, Wolves just have this knack of not only sitting back against City, but picking the right moments to attack. And yes, they don't have Pedro Neto this time, so they won't have that true outlet there. But I was pulling up some of the stats from the last time out, and it was out of the 34 Premier League games this season for City, that 2-1 loss was the eighth worst pass completion percentage for City of the entire season. Where's the other stat that I was looking for? And it was also the tied second furthest average shot distance. So I think that really encapsulates what Wolves do great against City. And that's, first of all, they even though they sit back, they find ways to disrupt the play. And we didn't have Rodri in that first game, so he will provide a massive boost relative to that performance. But they do a really good job at sort of like breaking up the play and sort of breaking up the tempo that City would like to play at, and then also not allowing that sort of like interior penetration as well. So if Rodri can fix that in terms of the passing percentage, if KDB can fix the sort of shot distance in terms of his deliveries into the box, then, you know, I feel really good about this result. But if Wolves are able to sort of keep that same game plan that they did the first time around, that's how I think it could get tricky.
We talk about the psychological effects on Wolves. The thing is, I don't think that City have the advantages here that Arsenal do when they're coming up against these kind of teams that have nothing to play for, table-wise, because even if Wolves don't have positions in the table to play for, it's still a massive scalp to beat City.
100%.
Far bigger than it is with Arsenal. Yeah, we are ultimately still the team to beat. So there could be some aspects of that that may drive them on, perhaps to push that a little bit harder than they otherwise would. The flip side of that as well, Arsenal play before us again. I've been saying for a few weeks that if we get the chance to be ahead of Arsenal when they kick off, I think they may be prone to collapse. But the same could potentially be said about City. We do have a track record for having that resilient mentality and for pulling through and doing what we need to do. Hell, we did it last weekend, right? That's what we are capable of doing. But how much does it complicate things, again, that Arsenal are kicking off before us? And you know, by the time we actually go into our game, they could be 4 points ahead instead of one again. And it feels like we're kind of bashing our heads against brick walls at the moment because we're pulling through, we're getting these big results, and we're still finding ourselves in second place.
Yeah, I don't know. I think for me, as far as I see it, it doesn't change all that much because if they do win, then the pressure is still on for the players. They know, okay, we have to lock in, get the 3 points here, or else the title is slipping out of our hands. On the flip side of things, if Arsenal do drop points, it is just that extra motivation, in my opinion, to go out and again secure the 3 points and be like, no, we can now just grab it and secure it perhaps even earlier than the final game week of the season. So I think you can grab that motivation either way, dependent on how that result goes. And I think information is probably a good thing, generally speaking. I think unless you are a club that is sort of, you know, doesn't have the sort of mental strength and fortitude that City do, then okay, you'd be looking at that and say, oh, if Arsenal drop points, the players might sort of take their foot off the pedal a bit. But I don't see that happening at City. So I think there is motivation either side, depending on how that result goes. And I do get the benefit to playing before Arsenal and then having that chance to sort of put the pressure on them. But I do think in terms of the motivation relative to this match, I really think it doesn't matter that much either way.
Interesting. I think it's quite tough for City to be going into these games. You know, we are assuming, of course, that Arsenal do win. If they lose, if they draw, then completely different state of mind and completely different set of circumstances. And I agree. I think if Arsenal do drop points, it will drive the team on to do better. But I just do have concerns. I think at this stage of a title race, whichever team is beginning and ending the weekend ahead with these games in hand, you know, not accounted for yet, they have that advantage. And for now, I think the psychological tilt is still in Arsenal's favour. So how do City approach it? You've already mentioned that Wolves, what they do very well is that they can break up our rhythm, they can sit back, they can be defensively organised, you know, play five at the back. They will probably have two midfielders sat fairly deep as well. You're looking by default at having eight behind the ball, including the goalkeeper. How do we approach this then? Is this going to be the kind of game where we might have to be a little bit patient in the first half and just kind of softly, slowly, you know, break them down? Or are we looking at City just trying to take an early lead? And look, we can play it out on paper all we want, but how do you think this is going to look like from a City perspective? Is this going to be one of those frustrating home games, or do you imagine that we're just, you know, we're talking almost a lineup case, your Doku versus your Grealish, etc., which we'll get to in the second half. So how do we go into this one and what can we expect?
Yeah, I think it is more the former in terms of sort of a patient grind in a sense, because as you said, you know, they're going to drop men behind the ball. I was watching back their extended highlights against Luton last week, and even against Luton, they put 10, 11 men behind the ball at moments. You know, again, they're the sort of pass-progressive team. They pick their moments to do that. And so, yes, I think, especially with the game being at the Etihad, City are going to be able to have that level of control, and it will sort of be a matter probably of keep them penned in, keep the chances coming, whether that leads to corners, whether that is long shots, whatever it may be, just keep the chances coming consistently and from all areas, sort of. Again, I think focus on the two weaknesses that Wolves drew out last time, which is try to connect as many passes as possible, sort of, and almost put an even greater emphasis on that to sort of get that rhythm going, especially in the beginning stages of the game. And on top of that, using KDB to be the one to really pick apart this deep block and find those incisive passes and sort of stretch them back. I like to call it like a yo-yo effect against these deep blocks, where like you have to push them back and then you get that space that opens up around the top of the box. So I think it's really those two things and just being patient, because we will have loads of shots in this game. We will have loads of chances. It really is just a matter of sort of being patient and knowing that those opportunities are going to come. It might not be until the 30th minute, might not be until the second half, but when those moments do come, you have to be ready to pounce on them. And I think on the flip side of things, I believe Wolves only had three shots the first time out, three shots plus the Ruben own goal. You have to just mitigate their chances when they do come. And we'll get into how you sort of deal with that potentially through selection later in the second half. But I think just generally speaking, it's really just being on top of your game mentally, because as a player in a possession heavy system, it can be really difficult where you're in their final, you're in our final third for the entire game. And then all of a sudden they get that one sort of chance on the break. And we've seen it with City all the time. It's like, those are where the mistakes happen. Those are where we really fall apart. Even if the opposition only have two, three, four chances the entire game, if that catches City out mentally and they're not ready for it and the defenders aren't ready to take on that challenge in that moment, that's when things can really get rocky. So I think it's really just being as sharp as possible and knowing that those chances will come on the attacking end and being ready for those moments of sort of weakness and having to sort of, you know, take on that pressure when need be on the defensive end.
It's funny, you talking about how we might approach it and how we might have to be patient. I'm casting my mind forward to tomorrow evening, or for the listeners, to this evening at the Etihad. And our players are fighting against our own crowd as well with this. Because once we get to this stage, the last one, two, three, four, five games of the season, that patience isn't there in the stand. Mm. You know, early on in the season, if we have that kind of game where it's 20 minutes in, 30 minutes in, 40 minutes in, and yeah, the crowd are okay. You know, that's just part and parcel of how City play and how we operate. And the feeling in the stand is, okay, it's going to come. But if that happens tomorrow night, you know, you look up, 5 minutes gone, 10 minutes gone, 15 minutes gone, 20 minutes gone, the crowd's going to get nervous, because these, at this stage of the season, every minute counts. So I think it's going to be quite painful. And I do think the players will feel that. And, you know, hell, if it's still 0-0 at 50, 60 minutes, there's going to be some jeopardy coming into play, because that nervous energy around the ground will start to seep into the players. So we'll talk about, in the second half, the players. And I'm very interested, because you've spoken a lot in this first half about how important Kevin De Bruyne might be. So I will assume that he is going to be in your pick for the starting 11. So listeners, don't go anywhere. Second half, we'll have a chat about City team selection, especially at the back. The everlasting evergreen Foden versus Kevin De Bruyne or both question, and anything else we might want to chat about before we face Wolves. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after the break.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. Do follow us. Do leave us a review, or as Mr. Booker likes to say, unless it is a shit one. Alex, lineup then. It still feels like we've not really seen, or we don't really know what an ideal Manchester City 11 looks like this season. There are questions up and down the pitch constantly. Of course, there's always questions about, I was going to say Edison and Ortega, but I don't want to give these Twitter idiots any credibility. But, you know, with the questions around Kyle Walker, how much should he be playing? Diaz, Akanji, Ake, who's the best in that centre-half role? John Stones, how much he can play? Left-back, Ake versus Guardiola. Rodri's an exception. But again, in the middle of the park, we've got De Bruyne, or is it Foden? Where do we put Bernardo in? Grealish or Doku? Haaland or Alvarez? Are we better without Haaland? Are we more fluid? Are we more wasteful? It just doesn't feel this season like City have found their preferred lineup when everyone's fit. And we're four games from the end of the season. You know, I think in past seasons, we've asked these questions before these games and said, who's the 11? And we just reeled them off. Yeah. Like, yeah, these boys are fit. They're playing. That's it. That's who's in. But it hasn't been the case. So I will put it to you. I'm just looking on FotMob. I don't know if this is slightly outdated. Foden, Diaz, are they likely to be out?
Foden had an illness last weekend. I believe he's been back in training. And then Ederson's been in training since Tuesday. I'm not sure on Ruben.
Okay. Thank you. And that's why Alex should be hosting and not me, because I've not done my homework. So how do you see us lining up then? Let's fire off an 11 and then I think we'll start to get into the nitty-gritty, maybe some of the choices that you're going to make.
Yeah, I think, well, okay, starting with Ederson, I believe he's going to be fit since he has been in training since Tuesday. There hasn't been any setback as far as I'm aware. As we're recording this on Thursday, he was in training earlier today, I believe. So shouldn't be any issues there. He should return. I think the back line is really interesting. We might want to pause here for a second before we go to the attack, because I think in past seasons, or at least maybe just at the beginning of this season, if you had told nearly any City fan that Ruben Diaz would be fit, assumedly, and not locked in to a starting spot in the run-in, I think everyone would have called you crazy. And yet, here we stand, and I'm not sure whether he is, you know, going to be there tomorrow or not, because you look at the sort of central defensive partnerships that we've played recently, and Nathan Ake and Manu Akanji have been exceptional at the back. And on top of those two, you have Joshko Vardiol, who I believe Phil Foden won City's Player of the Month for April, but Joshko Vardiol is nominated for the Premier League Player of the Month for April.
Yeah, PL Player of the Month.
He has been on fire. And then on the other side of the pitch,
turnaround, isn't it, for him?
Yeah.
And a lot of doubts earlier in the season.
Yeah, not me, but many others out there who didn't see the vision. But that's another conversation for another time. And then on the other side of the defense, you have Kyle Walker, who, as much as, you know, his performance last weekend was one of the worst I've seen from him, period, he's pretty much an inevitability at this point, because he is the club captain, as much as many of us would like to sort of believe otherwise. He has played the vast majority of City's games this season. So,
do you think he should be? Just out of interest on Walker. Mm-hmm. I know we said we'd pick it apart after you've been through 11, but Walker, I think, is an interesting one to talk about, because he has been much maligned this season from a few different places. Obviously, there was some personal stuff earlier on in the season, but Pep seems to trust him. Pep trusts him, and he is prone to dropping the odd stinker. He's become more prone, you know, he's not getting any younger, and he's become more prone over the last few months of dropping those stinkers. But do you think he deserves to be? And is it just a case of at such a crucial time in the season, Pep just trusts him? He's a veteran of the game. He's done there, been there, seen it all.
Yeah, exactly. I think as much as I can nitpick at his game and highlight the deficiencies that he has shown all season, there is still that much to it, is that, first of all, as you said, Pep trusts him. He is that senior figure. On top of that, especially if it's not going to be the sort of quote-unquote John Stones or Manu Akanji role, you need that fullback who's going to be able to push up, and City just don't really have another option. You know, you're not going to play Manu Akanji in that role necessarily over Kyle Walker. I don't believe Pep is going to choose that, and Rico Lewis is likely not going to play that over Kyle Walker. So there really aren't that many options, assuming you know, the system that we've seen quite recently where the fullbacks are pushing up high, as long as that stays, there really isn't much other option other than Kyle Walker.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the thing as well with Walker. The fullback market is drab. Across Europe, across world football, really, at the moment. So that we may sooner see a change in system than we do a replacement for Walker. For my money, it's that we're going to have an inverted right back in the same way that we had Chancelo in that inverted left back role. But that is a conversation for when we get into the transfer window after all the chaos and carnage of the season has finished. So, Rodri, that's a lock, obviously. My question with Rodri is, do we have somebody beside him a little bit deeper, potentially a Kovacic, potentially a John Stones, potentially a Rico Lewis, or is it going to be a case of Rodri's in that holding role himself, keeping it tidy, recycling the ball, and we have two in front of him?
Yeah, I think there's sort of two options here for Pep to go for. The first one would be, especially with no Pedro Neto for Wolves. So last time out, Vardiol was benched against Wolves, and Nathan Ake started off the left, presumably because he is that one-on-one defender that you want to play against Pedro Neto, even though he got burned for Wolves' first goal in that game. This time around, I think, you know, you have the sort of liberty there to either bench Ake or push Ake into the inside and play Vardiol as he has been out wide. And if that does happen, I think we will likely see, you know, your sort of two center backs at the back, Rodri joined by either Bernardo or Kovacic in midfield, and then you have your two fullbacks, Vardiol and Walker, presumably either side pushing high. And then I think the other potential option would be to go back to the sort of 3-2 system, mostly because that system, as far as I know it to be, is one that is sort of designed to mitigate against these sides that like to sort of pounce on you on the counter. So I think there's the option for that, where you have, you know, sort of five true attackers in front of Rodri. You have Akanji or Stones step up alongside him, and then you have your three defenders alongside around the back. I think those are the two options. I wouldn't really be surprised to see it go either way, in all honesty, but I do think you need to provide that support next to Rodri in midfield regardless.
Left wing. I'm not asking about how you voted yesterday. Oh, no, actually, no, you're in the US. Yeah, exactly. You didn't vote at all. Yeah, forget that.
Still a good joke. Still a good joke.
Thank you. Left wing, and boy, I'm going to be glad when we no longer need to have these conversations for whatever reason, but it is that also an evergreen question. Jack Grealish, he wasn't fantastic against Forest. He did not start against Brighton. When he came on, he wasn't. Didn't light up the pitch, although the game was pretty much over by then. Doku has been better of late. Again, he didn't really exactly light the place up against Forest. And of course, Grealish and Doku did start together. Not sure that little experiment worked. Again, we're experimenting. Five games from the end of the season. Here we are. So how do you see us lining up out wide? Firstly, with the Grealish versus Doku question, and then also, you know, how do we set up on the other side as well?
Yeah, I think Doku probably is going to be the choice here, mostly down to the fact that Wolves will be sitting deep for a lot of the match. Doku started the last game out against Wolves, and he had the most touches of any City attacker or midfielder in that game. And City were pushing the ball down the left side just again and again in that match. And one of the things, looking at the sort of stats and report from that match, is City were really quite poor at getting the ball into the box and having that penetration, and yet Jeremy Doku was the one who provided that when City did have it. So I think it's another case of that, where, you know, assuming Kevin De Bruyne is there and he's the one that's sort of sitting on the peripheries on the outside of the box, swinging balls in, trying to thread those little passes through, Jeremy Doku on that wing to sort of push the defense back again and then be able to play those passbacks when needed. I think it just makes sense here. If you play Grealish here, you know, he's going to be sort of a bit more timid in a sense, just by the nature of how he plays relative to Jeremy Doku. And I think you really just need that sort of straight up penetration here from Doku. And I agree with you. I don't like how these conversations have gone across the entirety of the season, but it really does come down to, you know, there are two different options. And I think Doku is just the one who's better suited for this opportunity.
On the other side, who's on the right?
I mean, I think the other four names are likely sort of picking themselves potentially, and it's probably you know, Erling Haaland, Kevin De Bruyne, Phil Foden, Bernardo Silva. So it's probably a mixture of Bernardo Silva, Phil Foden, and even Kevin De Bruyne at times sort of floating in and around, being a bit fluid. It could be either Bernardo or Phil off the right. I think it depends, again, going back to the defensive system. If you have the sort of Stones role, you can probably get away with playing Foden in the middle from the off. If it's the sort of fullbacks pushing up, then you probably have Bernardo sitting deeper to step in alongside Rodri in possession. So I think it really depends on the system and how that fleshes out. But I would really be surprised if we saw anyone but those four names to sort of fill in those remainder spots in the attack.
Yeah. Okay. And last question, Haaland. Look, he's fully fit again, ready to start. Didn't start against Forest, but I thought he scored a wonderful goal when he came on. I loved that one. I loved it because that's also a lot of what we've needed to see more of from Erling, that kind of goal where he's creating his own space and creating his own chance rather than being the elite poacher that we know he is in the box when the ball is served up to him. But the way he took that goal and the way he created the space for himself was beautiful, and it's encouraging. If he could do a little bit more of that in the last few games of the season, that'd be ace. But there have still been a lot of people saying that there's two different conversations here. There's City look more fluid without Haaland, which I agree. Naturally, when we've not got Haaland, we are more fluid because we're putting in players that have got a little bit more to the all-round game. But there are still some saying we look better without Haaland. For your money, come straight back in. Absolutely should be straight back in, no questions asked.
I think that will be the case, yeah. I've caught actually a bit of flack for this recently because I have been one of the people who has been a bit vocal about City's performances without Haaland. And I think it all goes back to the system not being in place this season. And as you said, it's still 5 games from the end of the season. There's experimentation going on. I think that's done a disservice to Erling Haaland this season, where last season the system was set up for him to excel and for everyone around him to excel. And that just hasn't been the case this season. And I think you would be a fool to suggest that, you know, at some moments this season, we have been better. Like, I think you would be a fool to go against the idea that without Haaland, we have been better at points this season. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that in the fourth game, in game week 35 of the Premier League season, with the title on the line, you bench Erling Haaland against a Wolves side? No, I don't think it does. I don't think those ideas are mutually exclusive. But I do think that there is a case to be said about, you know, what he provides the side. It's just probably not a conversation to be had relative to selection.
Oh, you're going to catch some fire on Twitter tomorrow.
No, I think for me, like exactly like you said, that goal last weekend, that is the type of goal that you would like to see Erling Haaland and the type of chance you would like to see him have more often.
Yeah.
And yet that goal only came about because, first of all, Forest got sort of very undisciplined towards the end of that game. They allowed themselves to be stretched. Kevin De Bruyne receives the ball in the pocket. And again, that goal does not happen if Kevin De Bruyne isn't the one in the middle of the space there. So it's not all about Erling Haaland. It's also about his relationship with Kevin De Bruyne. And so I think that people like are just making a bit too, they're being a bit too reactionary in a sense of like, oh, Erling Haaland came on and changed the game in 30 minutes. Of course, because the game opened up, Kevin De Bruyne was able to find that space. It's a bit silly to me, but yeah, I think for this one, we aren't going to have the same nature of chances because Wolves will likely be, again, compact in the way that they defend. But going back to what I was saying earlier about Kevin De Bruyne's deliveries being a key in this one, you need Erling Haaland in the center of the box to be able to either get his head on those chances or, if the ball falls down, be the one to sort of poach it and just hammer it home when the opportunity comes. So for me, I agree in a sense with what you said, that we have been more fluid this season without Erling Haaland, but in this one, it's not much of a conversation for me. And I can
visually see the nerves in Alex's face. No, you're right. Look, my own defense of Erling Haaland this season has been that he is a luxury in that you are relying on the team behind him clicking. If the team behind Erling Haaland isn't clicking, if players are off form, they're not finding the passes, and the system isn't seamless enough, he isn't going to get the goals that we're expecting of him. Mind you, he's still right up at the top of the Premier League top scorers table. So, you know, it's a funny one, but obviously he set that bar so incredibly high for himself. And if the players aren't behind him serving him up, then he isn't that kind of player like Aguero that can sniff out his own chances. He needs that served up to him.
Yeah, exactly. To add one more thing in here, if you think back to last season, we had the sort of KDB right-sided cross to the back post that was just a consistent chance method. You also had Grealish serving him up from the left side of the pitch just constantly, and those were where a lot of his goals came from. If you think back this season, those two chance creation methods have not been existent pretty much, because even when KDB has been fit and we have tried that sort of attacking pattern with the overlap, teams have been able to sniff it out because they know what's coming. They saw it for a full season. They know how to defend it better. And on top of that, as we said earlier, the system is just not really consistent this season. You don't have the chances falling to him as consistently as you would like as a striker. And I believe his sort of shots per 90, like he's getting more shots per game this season. But again, it's just the nature of those chances. Not all chances are created equal. And as a striker, having that level of consistency to know when the chance is coming, know who it's coming from, that just is a world of difference from what we have seen this season. And again, I agree with you. I don't think it's really a discredit to Erling Haaland. It's more so just the situation that he's been in.
Yeah, for my money on this one, my little 2 cents before we wrap up, we've got 4 games of the season to go. And to deserve to win the title from here, we're probably going to have to win out. If we're going to win out, it means every single player is doing their job and doing it well. And if all 10 players behind Erling Haaland are doing their jobs and doing it well, Erling Haaland will score goals. So I agree. I think there's been moments of the season where I have questioned if there are certain times, certain games, certain game plans where we would be better off with a little bit more fluidity and dynamism up on that top line. But with 4 games to go, you play your best players, you play the best system that we know of, and everyone has to do their bit, and that's it. So, Alex, then, before we wrap up, anything else? In fact, give me a score prediction.
That's a good one. I've been pretty good with these when I have predicted them this season. Let me think for a second. I'm going to go 3-0 to City.
3-0, okay. I'll back you. I'll go 3-0. I think it's going to be a relative calm before a 3-game storm as we get towards the final 270 minutes of the season after this one. So, Alex, thank you very much. Been a pleasure as always.
Appreciate it. Yeah, great having you here without our parental guardian to keep us in check.
No Amos keeping us in check. No Adam winding us up, and no Andrew Detmer throwing Opta and the entire book of understat in our faces. It's fantastic, isn't it, listeners? Thank you very much again on all your podcast platforms: Apple, Spotify, etc., etc., etc. Follow, subscribe, leave a review. It really helps us find more Blues like yourselves. So enjoy the game. Hopefully we'll be coming out the back of it with 3 points, and we will see you afterwards on the match review. Cheers all.
Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.